It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
Glad to be here, Mike.
And I also want to welcome on the phone Zaz Hollander. Welcome, Zaz.
Howdy, Mike and Terry and everybody out there.
You have been busy, Zaz, writing all kinds of articles. And we have a long list of topics today. I'm going to start reaching back a little bit to things happening earlier in the week. A number of vehicular accidents resulting in death, actually. Parks vehicle crashes. You covered some of that?
Yeah, there were, well, one specific really horrible crash. Bad enough that people who are kind of used to dealing, unfortunately, with fatal crashes were really shaken by it. This was on the Monday afternoon of Labor Day weekend, and there was a 40-year-old woman from Palmer, Carrie Blomquist, who was really well known as a ski and soccer coach, and her daughter, her 5-year-old daughter, Addie, were southbound on the parks in kind of the area of Denali State Park when, for reasons we don't know, their Subaru entered the oncoming traffic and hit two motorcycles carrying three people and then collided with a pickup, kind of a following truck behind the motorcycles, people
right.
who knew the people on the motorcycles, and the Carrie and Addie died in that collision. And two of the motorcyclists, a married couple from Fairbanks, North Pole, died as well after they were hit. But there was a really kind of horrible, confusing accident scene in which a whole bunch of people, I mean, the traffic, the accident blocked the park's highway. And then, you know, medics are trying to get there from various places, nowhere close. LifeMed helicopters were coming in. So in the meantime, for at least a half an hour, it sounds like, Good Samaritans on the scene, you know, nurses. I talked with the wife of a surgical technician. People kind of enlisted themselves into assistance at what was really a brutal scene, but just trying to triage as much as they could. And so at this point, we still don't know, you know, what happened, but the there was one motorcyclist who was critically injured. It sounded like he was going to be okay from some reports I saw yesterday that he was going into surgery, which is good because it means he's stable enough to go into surgery.
Right. Horrendous, horrendous in part because of the efforts of so many people on the scene to provide aid that in some respects may have been very helpful, in other respects ultimately was not able to provide life-saving.
How far did medics have to come, Zaz, before they could get there? Where was it in relation to?
I know they were coming up from Trapper Creek. I don't know if they were coming down from or over from Healy.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, I couldn't, I think in part because of the computer systems at the borough, I couldn't tell how long it took them to get there.
I think it was identified as roughly mile 156. If that's
right.
the case, that's about the worst place to be because you're roughly equidistant.
Yeah.
From anywhere, providing service that way.
And that is certainly one of the aspects of driving in Alaska, you know, even on a busy holiday weekend when you're driving past places. I mean, Denali State Park has, I don't know how many visitors a day, but it certainly isn't out in the boonies in that sense. But
right.
when you get into trouble, it things can happen. Things can spiral fast, obviously.
And that was a devastating one. It took four lives. What are the traffic accidents? I think there's been a couple on the Seward Highway, too, down towards Portage. But where are we sitting? Do you know the share? Fatalities?
In terms of number of fatal, I don't know that, Terry.
We know that there was another single car accident early in the morning. It was reported at the borough assembly that a maintenance manager, presumably on his way to work, drove off the road and died, and I'm not sure what the cause there either.
Yeah, the troopers didn't have a cause, and the kind of reading between the lines on what little information they had made us wonder if there was some kind of a health problem involved, but I have no information.
Okay.
Official information backing that up.
Okay. Well, let's switch to another topic here, also one that involves, in this case, a natural disaster. I know listeners are aware that there was an earthquake in Hokkaido. Palmer's sister city is Saroma, which is in the northeast of that island. And for a period of time, the entire Japanese island lost power. We have just welcomed a delegation of students and teachers from Saroma. They'll be here for a period of time visiting. And I had the opportunity to talk to one of the escorts, and she seemed to think that things were, at least in Saroma, in pretty good shape, that power had been lost and had been now restored to some areas. But following along, my understanding is that there was considerable damage. There was a loss of life. There were slides of all sort, interruptions of train service, road service, and all the rest of it. And Hokkaido is very much like Alaska. It has the same feel, and Saroma is appropriate as a sister city by climate and many other ways. And I know that this was a significant earthquake. It was not a small trembler and to have caused all of that. And we're still trying to pick up and figure out, you know, what actual damage was done. But I just wanted to share that as well.
On the sister cities front, I will say I was at a celebration in Anchorage for their sisters, one of their sister cities. They have six, who knew? And it would be England, and there was a really nice reception celebrating anniversary of that. But I know I was maybe not the only one in the room. Of course, I was from the Valley, and there were a lot of Anchorage people there, but I had no idea they had that many sister cities. But six is a lot, but all spread all over the world. Don't ask me what they are, because I haven't got them to memory, but I think that's probably something most people don't know.
And the one here in Palmer is going on for about 40 years and has been a very inspirational relationship. Many of the original people who first were parts of exchanges years ago have grown into adulthood. In some cases, their kids have participated in, are participating in these exchanges. So with that, let's switch to what appears to be an uptick in local crime, shoplifting, perhaps homelessness. There have been some incidents that have resulted in grand jury action and the rest of it. Have you followed any of the homeless issue here in the Valley, Zaz?
No, I have not. I have not followed that very closely, but it's certainly been around for years.
Right. And the question, of course, is there an increase or not, or there's a perception? Those figures, those numbers, are still being gathered. I have the sense, anecdotally, in talking to various people who have businesses, that there's an appearance of that. And it may be that there is just a little more obvious shoplifting or more obvious presence of people who seem to lack a fixed abode. And that's something we need to explore a bit further. We will. The police department, City of Palmer, keep statistics that are available, and we hope to pin that down. I know that there was at least one individual who, because of making of threats to various business people in this area, has been in the pretrial facility and has just gone to a grand jury hearing where he will be brought forward to a felony trial. My sense about this is that it's a very difficult line to walk. We have an active police department. We have various ordinances in place, but it almost seems that a person has to go and commit a crime before they are identified and can come into a system for help. Otherwise, there is not a lot that can be done, even though there are many agencies that offer help. They range from church groups to social services and so on. If someone resists help, it's a very difficult thing.
Yeah, I think we should say that the Anchor School or the Palmer or the Metsu School District has kept pretty good track on homeless youth because they're impacted by it, and there's probably some numbers for that, and it's gone up every year. But we also should say that even though we're one of the only growing places in the state, we don't have a homeless shelter out here. So there's not an alternative. Now, there is getting to be more treatment beds and that sort of thing. But unless I'm wrong, and Zazie, you can let me know if I am, and there really isn't anything like a homeless shelter out here for the whole borough.
Yeah, there certainly isn't a borough-wide shelter. I think there are a few different forms of assistance. I mean, Terry, I think, is right there. I haven't looked at that in the last 6 months or so. There mm-hmm. are abused women's shelters. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember, there may be some faith-based shelters coming online, mm-hmm. smaller ones, and maybe for families mm-hmm. Rather than, you know, say, Brother Francis mm-hmm. Or, you know, a more conventional-looking shelter. But no, there is no, you know, if you come to Metsu and you're homeless, there's no place that you know to go for food, or for shelter. But there certainly are any number of programs available, for meals. But to go back to the homeless / shoplifting issue, I think what we're also seeing are kind of combined effects of opioid / meth mm-hmm. addiction. Mm-hmm. I think there's a, and this is anecdotal, I haven't reported the story here, mm-hmm. but there is a constant I don't know if it's a growing number, but certainly consistent reports of younger people, maybe not school age anymore, addicted, living in kind of squatting situations where they're maybe in the middle of a neighborhood, maybe out of Jim Creek, wherever these, you know, campers pop up and disappear. And the convergence with SB 91 on shoplifting is very weak. Mm-hmm. And so there certainly was, on crimes of the level of shoplifting, I should say, not specifically shoplifting. We were getting 2 years ago consistent reports of law enforcement, you know, maybe you'll get a citation, but you certainly won't get arrested and taken off the streets. So, that there is an argument to be made that in some ways encourages more shoplifting.
And speaking off the streets, even if someone does find somebody squatting or somebody homeless in even one of the cities, what are the police supposed to do with them if there's no shelter here, if there's nowhere to send them? That's what I wonder, is that, you know, what tools have we eliminated for law enforcement? You know, what you mentioned, SB 91 in that portion, that's certainly something the legislature could have fixed last session, and they didn't. But I've got to think that the tools are somewhat limited, not just the capacity of law enforcement out of the 5 square miles of Palmer, but the troopers, that whole situation that you've reported on. It all is just sort of a climatic, crash right here.
Well, speaking of organizations that are moving forward to provide additional services, particularly in the mental health area, we had the opportunity to interview Dr. Lindstrom, who is involved with the ER at Metsu Regional, but more importantly, came in to describe a partnership with the Mayo Clinic. Mayo Clinic establishes partnerships around the country for consultation, and there are only 2 places in Alaska that has that kind of relationship. One is in Fairbanks, and our second, just established here in August, is with Metsu Regional. Dr. Lindstrom was particularly happy to have this and described that at no additional cost to patients, there is a second opinion on issues that require a second opinion. But more importantly, it was a vote of confidence that the Metsu Regional staff is of a quality that Mayo was willing to work with him. So we'll seeing how that goes, but also in the process, many of you may know that Matsu Regional is expanding to an additional floor with 35 beds focused on mental health issues. So that's new stuff just happening. Speaking of new stuff, the Glen Highway construction continues. And I've heard people say, wow, what a change in view. And I suspect there's going to be something like what people experienced when the new trunk road opened up. You know, the viewscape was the same, but the way you had a chance to look at it changed dramatically when you're on Trunk Road, at least in my experience. And I'm already beginning to get that feel by the huge amount of dirt that's being moved just for the utilities, not to mention the road construction.
New bike lanes going in, too.
And a new bike lanes going in, and that will mean that it's possible to go all the way to the fair in the future.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Zaz, any sense that you have about that construction from your perspective?
Yeah, I don't have any interesting journalistic perspectives, but I live up Palmer Fishhook, but for some reason haven't been making the drive kind of down Bailey Hill and through Palmer lately, and did a few days ago, and we're shocked, like, what happened? And another, our photographer came up from Anchorage for the fair and said it doesn't look like Palmer anymore. I didn't recognize it for a minute there.
Right, right. And of course, that is the subject of considerable discussion at the Palmer City Council level as they look at coming into town. As you know, if you come in from the south and you pass the Alaska State Fair, one of the things that happens is that you have an opportunity to bypass, essentially, the downtown area by going on the Glen or taking the Y route that brings you right in, and there's a welcoming sign, and you can pass right into the city. That's going to change when the highway is completed. There'll be actually a stoplight there, and you'll have to make the decision to go and do that. But you'll also have a much more of a boulevard approach that'll carry you by Palmer. And the real question is, what will people see if they're, for the first time, approaching Palmer that will indicate the city is there? So that's an interesting question, and I'm sure next year when they get around to doing the work, we'll see how that plays out. Another topic I've called the campaign season continuing, and I've suggested that the three amigos have remained in the race for governor, starting right there. We had an announcement by the Begich campaign, by Mr. Begich, Senator Begich himself, that he was going to run, and Governor Walker continues.
How much press was really there for that, I wonder?
Well, the Anchorage Daily News covered it. There was a picture, a variety of things. And of course, Governor Walker has been very active as governor. I keep receiving all kinds of bill signing announcements and other steps that have been taken. And, of course, Michael Dunleavy is somewhere thereabouts still running as well. So it feels a little bit as if there's a pause here. I know that they're all running, they're doing things, but, of course, we have between now and the general election in November, the October election, and we're about halfway through our interviews with candidates in contested races for the Assembly, the School Board, and the City Council. And maybe that's been the focus of people's attention a bit more before we roll out into, of course, all the last few weeks before the general election.
So, well, it should be. It's 30 days away.
Yep.
I mean, it's really coming up, and there's two big ballot questions on there regarding moving the election, the pros and cons. I went over, the Assembly did, and you'll hopefully start getting some information on that because there certainly are two sides to that coin, and also whether the Assembly should pursue police powers. So I think at this point, all the campaigns, it's fair to say, for both the general and the local election, are really hoping for a good turnout and doing their best to turn out the vote.
And the question about moving the date of the election is complex, in part because, as I understand, if the borough joins and with the general election, the city of Palmer is still doing their election in October.
All the cities.
All the cities. And that means that the cost factors that should be understood, I think, by people, because if you're talking an increased cost that's running to hundreds of thousands of dollars to change the election time date, I would think that people who may end up paying, because this money has to come from somewhere, and typically from the citizenry, might factor into the decision whether it should be moved or not. I might also add that we plan to be there on September 12th. The Meadow Lakes Community Council is having a meeting and is going to have Neil Fried there as a speaker, and in addition is going to be focused on a pro-con, trying to lay out just what are the specifics, maybe the facts of the costs and the changes required if you're going to make the move. I think that one, to me, is the most interesting, because many people, I don't believe, have the information about what that means. Mm-hmm. To say, yes, I won't have to go to vote.
You'll have to stand in two lines, too.
Yeah, and then but what that really means in terms of is how long will it take to change it? Is it a good idea to change it? Or maybe we should just have the state go to mail-in ballots.
Well, they could all go to mail-in ballots. I think that Anchorage has proven pretty well that that can be done with enough voter education. And I know that Lieutenant Governor Malott has been convening, and I'm not sure what the outcome was at, but they've been looking at it pretty strongly. It certainly has proven to be a turnout vote motivator in other states. The other thing that's going to impact with the local election having at the same time is we won't have results right away, and the state has already said they don't want to handle our election. So, again, there's maybe this is something that, you know, the voters should give some pretty hard consideration to, and then see where we are next year as far as moving forward with mail-in, which seems to be the way a lot of states are handling it.
So I've saved the best for toward the end. And Zaz, my understanding is you've been following a suit that has involved a well-known family up in the Talkeetna area.
Yes, that's right. The Sheldon family.
Could you summarize that? Because I think there's been some movement, as I understand.
Yeah, there was movement at the Supreme Court. There was a decision on Friday on a really kind of, I think, a painful lawsuit. It's too bad Philip Manning isn't on this week, mm-hmm. because he could speak to this more locally anyway than I can. But, you know, Don and Roberta Sheldon were kind of Talkeetna royalty and still are considered, you know, Don was an already fairly famous pilot and then became kind of the pilot of Denali. Many geographic and other structural forms in Talkeetna and in the Alaska Range named after him. And Roberta was a businesswoman, historian, community activist. And they have three children, Robert, Holly, and Kate. And Robert and Holly were involved in various legal actions after Roberta died in 2014 and gave Robert, who is a businessman, the right to manage the family trust, which was worth about $1.7 million and included the Sheldon Mountain House, which was this kind of funky six-sided hut at 6,000 feet. Wow. On a Nunatak rocky outcrop, glacial outcropping in Denali National Park in an inholding. And the loss that Talkeetna has kind of suffered, I think, watching these two, and this lawsuit, I think, is sort of the tip of the iceberg in terms of the siblings getting along. But basically, Holly contested the way her brother was managing the trust and sued. And it turned into, a really ugly legal battle. There was a proposed settlement agreement that was signed that Holly then said, I didn't know that was a settlement. At any rate, she disagreed with the Superior Court ruling that mostly backed Robert's side of things. And so appealed to the state Supreme Court. And they took the case and then on Friday basically affirmed the lower court ruling. And so, Holly has said she will request a rehearing, but those are very rare, and you need to find new grounds that you're going to argue. You can't re-argue what they've already heard. So it's likely that this, at least the legal argument between these two, is over. But it doesn't in any way sound like the personal battles are done.
On a practical basis, having at this point provided one legal solution, what does that mean for the properties that they were contesting in particular?
On its face, there was never any change, and both Robert and Holly might disagree with me on that interpretation. But one of the issues at the heart of the litigation was that this settlement that Holly and her attorney did sign, this proposed settlement agreement, I should say, included a three-way split of the Mountain House, which is part of the trust. Since all of this, this year, Robert opened a new ritzy, exclusive five-room chalet on that same in-holding property. The Mountain House is still there, but now the chalet is there as well. And so the part of the issue that his sister was complaining about was that she thought that he had taken her air service and deprived them of the right, what she said was an exclusive right, to fly people up to that property. And so now that property includes this kind of swanky chalet. But there was, Robert said that there was never an exclusive agreement. Again, I think in part because this is a family dispute, there's a lot of bad blood here that was not addressed officially by the Supreme Court that isn't going away between the family members, certainly. But at this point, there's no change in the way the chalet is being managed or in the way the Mountain House, which you can visit, is being managed.
So where does Sister Kate end up with all of this?
Kate was not involved in the litigation. She wasn't named in the lawsuit, but she is. She did come to court, and she was there on behalf of Robert.
Whoa, we'll let that stand, and we will bring Philip Manning in one of the next Valley Edition shows, and we will get whatever the fallout is that he has been able to observe at that time. But we have reached the end of another edition of Valley Edition. So I want to thank Terry Snyder for coming in on a beautiful sunny day.
Glad to do it, Mike. Enjoy.
And I want to thank Zaz Hollander for taking a moment, breathing deeply, and being able to share also from her perspective. Thank you, Zaz.
No problem, Mike. Have a good week and or weekend, everybody.
All right. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.